You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm your host, Jocelyn Swigger, and last summer I took time off practicing to have a baby. Maybe you can hear him. And now I'm trying to get my brain and my chops back in shape by learning the Chopin Etudes. So this is my audio diary of that process.
Well, it's February 19th, and this was another week where I had been on my leg while I was practicing quite a bit of the time. So I did some right hand alone practice. So I wanted to start today with 10 number 2, this one. Because that's a piece that sure can use some right hand alone practice. Although it is the left hand that's kind of the driving force behind what's going on. One of the things that I need to work on some more next week for this one is that I need to think about where I'm changing my hand positions in the right hand. So for example, I play there's a lower part, there's a chord, and also the crawly around notes, so at the same time it's that. And so sometimes I can position the next chord as I'm playing, positioning and getting ready, or I can play this chord and play these and then jump to the next one. Anyway, I need to think a little bit more about where I jump, or actually when I jump from one position to the next, and it's not going to be the same for everyone. It gets kind of creepy crawly with all these. Anyway, I thought I'd play this for you. This is going to be from memory, and we're going to see how it goes. I'm actually going to stop because that doesn't feel good. And the reason it doesn't feel good is that I'm not putting enough time in between phrases. I'm just kind of going and going and going and going and going. And I bet when I listen to this, when I'm doing the editing, I don't edit the music because I'm sure you can hear, but I do edit the talking. I'm sure that when I listen to that, I'm going to hear that it's just kind of running and running and running and sounding actually very boring. So this is good for me to know. I need to make sure that I put in almost like taking a breath at the end of a phrase. Let me play the second A section. You know, it's ABA, right? Like two pieces of bread and peanut butter in the middle. You know, thing, different thing, first thing. So here's the second A section. And let me try and put some of those breaks in a little bit more clearly. A couple of those are probably a little bit too much. So this one's still, you know, I have not really done my kind of minute choreography like I was talking about before I played, where I figure out exactly how the hand positions shift work. So I need to really get in that this week, because this is one of those pieces that is getting to the point where sometimes it feels really good and sometimes it feels really rotten. Just now it felt really rotten. And I need to make sure that I'm being intentional about what I'm doing and making sure that it feels good all the time. So that's 10 number 2. I wanted to show you 2512 next. This one I said I was going to make sections and sort of figure out where those are, and also that I was going to look carefully at the music. And boy, am I glad I looked carefully at the music, because there are a couple of notes in this piece that I swear I've never heard, I've never noticed, I just had no idea that they were here. And I thought I would just show you where those are. So basically they're in measure 16 and measure 23. So this is a piece that pretty much has clear very, very consistent patterns through it is this one. And so forth. I'll play that through for you in a minute. But so, you know, each one, it's both hands do an octave with a note in the middle, and then they jump up to the next position and do it again. Octave with a note in the middle, and they jump up and do octave with a note in the middle, right? And it, so it's the whole thing. Octave, octave, octave. And so you can really count on that your thumb and your pinky are going to be in the shape of an octave whenever they land. Well, except you can't, because it turns out that in measure 16, I'm going to actually play from measure 15 because that'll make more sense. So measure 15 here is this. Octave, same, right? And then we have this great little melody that suddenly pops out, which suddenly you would think that it would go, this is an F in my thumb. You would think it would go to here, and I always did, but it actually goes to a G, which is just weird. I'm not really sure why he did that. So let me play that and see if you even hear it. Maybe you won't hear it. I've never heard it. It almost sounds like a wrong note, but I mean, it's in the chord, so it's not really a big deal. I don't know why he did that, but he does it every place in this piece. He does it there, and then he does it also in measure 24 in a similar thing. I'll start from measure 23. So here we have this. This. That's an E flat. I would have expected it to go here, but it goes up to the E flat. Now, well, you know, my bad luck, it's a little bit harder to play up to the E flat than it is to play to the D flat, but I'll work on it to make it work. So I don't know why he did that. And I would like to know why. Right now, it doesn't seem to me that makes the piece better or more interesting. I'm hoping that as I get to know this piece better, I will come to find those little anomalies. I'll figure out why I think he did it. But right now, I honestly have no idea. I don't know why he didn't just write it in as an octave like the rest of it. And, you know, it almost seems like maybe it's just a slip of the pen. I don't know. But the thing is, if it were a slip of a pen, why would he do it the same way in both places? So I don't think it's a slip of the pen, actually. Very weird. Anyway, here's my sections. Here's the first section. It's from the beginning. It's sort of the obvious one. It's from the beginning up to measure 8, so it's this. And then I'm starting my second section here. This is from measure 9 to measure 15. Sorry. There we go. And then I'm starting another section here at measure 15. Oops, I didn't go up enough. All the way up there. There we go. And then I'm starting another section here at measure 23. I'm going to turn my page now. So this section is here. Oh, I didn't, you know what? I turned the page too early and I played it wrong. Let me play 23 again. I didn't go high enough. So it goes 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, let me do that again, turning the page. So 23 is, this section is for measure 23 through 30. Making a mistake all over the place. Here we go. That's a measure where the pattern changes. And now here's measure 31 is the next section. This is from 31. I'm doing shorter sections now, actually. I'm going to say 31 to 34 is the next one. Okay, so that one. And then I'm going to do the next one from 35 to 38. And you'll hear it's kind of the same thing, but just a little bit higher. And then the next one, I'm going from 39 up through through 44, and you hear, again, it's the same thing, and then higher. Oh, and then here's another note that I was doing wrong, which I need to fix. So going here, and then starting a new section in, well, this is kind of, I could have started in 43, but I'm kind of doing a little place, like a little teeny starting place, almost like a little two-bar phrase, measure 45 and 46. This climb I love here. And then we're back where we were at the beginning and measure 47. So this is going to go from measure 47 through measure 54, which is much easier than the stuff I just came through. I'm sure you can hear. Oops. Turning the page. Okay, so now I'm going to do from measure 55 up to 62. And there's a change from what it did before here, so there might be a little bit of yelling on my part. And then here, this is measure 63. I'm going to have this one go up through measure 70. Say yay, C major, but there's still another page to go. So this is measure 71, and I'm going to really just say measure 71 to the end as one big section. Here's that G again. See, he really meant it. One potential teeny minefield at the very end. These last three measures are actually not that hard. But this is the end of the whole cycle. Like, this is the end of the entire thing, so this is the end of the concert, because I am not thinking of pairing these etudes with something else in a concert. I think that'll be enough. So this is the end of the concert, but he says pedal from here. So put the pedal down. Sorry. Here, so pedal down. And keep it down. So if I do that, there's this really nice, huge, rumbling, roaring ring. I didn't mean that to be so alliterative, but that was kind of nice. But anyway, it is. It's this wonderful thing. And that's the end of the concert, and what a fabulous end to a concert. Unless I play one note wrong. And these guys... jumping down to those G's. See, it's really easy to jump down to the A. Hear that? So I'm going to have to actually practice that a lot, because this is the kind of thing that would be easy to miss a note, and that's a place in the concert where I really don't want to miss one of those notes, because then I would have to lift up the pedal. Because see, if I miss a note here, I'll do it. I'll try and deliberately miss a note, and then I probably won't. But so if I hold the pedal down... Yeah, hear how the chord just sounds horrible. There's all that mess in it. So I'm going to have to really watch out for that, which sounds easy, except there's also this happening. This is the left hand here. And then it goes down there. Great piece. So this is a piece that I'm really enjoying working on. You can hear that there's a couple places that are much more awkward than other places. And it's partly about where the black keys and the white keys lie. But honestly, it's that I just haven't worked that much on the middle section of this. And I probably should. So now that I've got it broken up into sections, I'm going to be able to, I think, focus my practice a little bit more on this, but I really like this one. So the next one I want to show you is 10 number 7. This is the one where I called my piano technician, and I did call my piano technician. That was on my assignment list for this week. So he's going to come and tune my piano March 3rd, which is pretty exciting. It needs it, as I'm sure you can hear. So this is the one where I need to have a little bit of work done on my piano because the notes are not repeating very fast. Of course, that one now is. It's like when you take your car to the mechanic and say there's a problem, and then the car behaves perfectly. Anyway, this is this one. So the danger is that the bottom note doesn't repeat, which is a repeated note. Anyway, I had been playing this just without the repeated notes, but I have started trying to put them in this week. So I'm going to play this for you with repeated notes, and I'm actually going to play it for you from memory, although I can tell you right now there's a couple of holes, so I will probably stop and, you know, swear or whatever in the middle. So this is 10 number 7 from memory with all the notes under tempo, but we'll see how it goes. I had the memory trouble where I sort of thought I would. Did a little bit of composing, which I didn't love, but sometimes that happens. So Alfred Cortot was a pianist who played all these etudes, and there's some really wonderful recordings of him on YouTube actually doing these. And he suggested an exercise for this, which I haven't really done much of, but I think I'm going to try it this week and see what it does. So for each pair, right, you have these pairs with repeated notes. You can hear that the lower note repeats, right? So he suggests doing partly, I think, to make sure that the wrist is nice and flexible when you do these. So I'm going to try doing this exercise this week and see how that goes. And then I'll let you know how that Cortot exercise goes. The other thing I need to work on with this is there's a moment in measure 10, let me just show you this, where it makes the transition in the left hand into chords. And I actually negotiated it reasonably well this time. I was kind of happy about that. But it doesn't always work so well. It's here. Yeah, so I'll just show you the left hand. Actually, so for measure 10, it's, and then it does this, and then it goes to single notes. I tend to be a little surprised by that, and I tend to cheat and just then do the chords here. So I need to make sure that I actually play that chord. So I'll work on that a little bit. That's a spot I need to pay some attention to. So that's where I am with that. So I'm not going to have my piano tuned for next week. No, maybe I will. No, I'm clearly not able to do math. Yeah, so I'll have one more week without my piano being taken care of, but then hopefully it'll be better after that. So we'll see. So that's what's going on with that. Now, with 10 number 4, this is the one that I have put my sort of meta project of making my rhythm better and making my rushing not as bad onto. So what I'm doing is I'm putting one metronome beat per measure on this. So to do this at tempo, it would be metronome beat at 44, but I'm actually putting the metronome beat at 40, meaning 40 beats per measure. So what I am going to do is I'm going to actually put the microphone by the metronome and play you 10 number 4 with the metronome. Now you're going to hear that there's a couple of places where I'm not with the metronome. I'm expecting that the metronome is probably going to do that pesky thing that sometimes metronomes do, where they suddenly get faster or slower. So let me play this for you, and we'll just see how this goes. This is going to be from memory with the metronome doing one click per measure. Well, so I kind of lost it in the middle there. And of course I yelled, oh, I lost it. But you probably didn't hear me because the vocal mic was over by the metronome. So you can hear that that's really hard for me. That's really hard for me. I was barely with a metronome at all. You know, it's pretty easy to play with a metronome when it's just, you know, click, 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 click. But one of the things I'm trying to do is to sort of have my sense of time be more stable in and of itself so that I can feel it without having to rely on the metronome so much as a crutch. So that's one thing. Another thing is you might have noticed that at the beginning, especially, I was rushing a lot. And I think that's partly because the tempo I was just doing was a little bit under tempo. So that was 40. And actually, it would be at 44 to be fully at tempo. So I think this is an interesting way for me to work with this. Now, in this piece, like in this one, I'm going to need to put in little breathing spots in between. So my work with the metronome is not at all because I want it to be metronomic. It's really because I want to have a better sense of how my time relates to other time that I'm playing, like how my notes relate to other notes, how my beats relate to other beats. So I'm using the metronome as kind of a meta etude to have this project of learning these etudes also make my rhythm better. But it's, you know, that is hard for me in a way that I think means I need to keep working on it. So I will. You probably noticed that there were barely any dynamics, and meaning, you know, it was all about the same volume. So I have not put a lot of work into that yet, and mostly I'm still trying to make it comfortable. And I mean, it feels comfortable, actually. It feels fine to play that. So it's coming. I'm not, you know, full of hubris about it, because I'm learning that these pieces tend to get difficult in different places. But this one right now is feeling like one that I think I can handle, which is kind of nice. Okay, So now let me play something that I totally cannot handle yet at all. This is a 10 number 11. So this is my before version of this. I've been reading through this once a day this week. Haven't really started practicing it yet. And I have to warn you that this might, well, I know my before versions always sound kind of awful, but this one might even sound worse because this one's actually kind of tricky to read, especially to sight read, for a couple of reasons. One is that just about every chord is rolled. So like, and the notation for that is that you put a little, it looks like a pretty little ribbon, but you put like a little wavy line up and down to the left of the chord. And so if you look at the page, it's like wavy lines and black dots, wavy lines, wavy lines, wavy lines. And then the other thing that makes it tricky is that a lot of this piece is off the staff. So basically the treble clef staff goes from here to here. So if I'm playing any note that's higher than this, like any of these all the way up to there, all of those notes are going to be written above the staff with little teeny ledger lines, they're called. So when we look on the staff, it's really easy to automatically see exactly what a note is. Like you don't have to think, oh, what is that note? When you look at a note on the staff, you just know exactly what the note is. But these notes that are up on the ledger lines, sometimes you have to go, okay, how many ledger lines is that up there? It's visually a little disorienting. So the wavy lines by themselves are not so disorienting, but I'm finding that wavy lines plus everything being off the staff, in the left hand too, to some extent, is making me not able to read very well. So consider yourself warned. Here's my before version of 10 number 11. But I think it's going to be gorgeous when I get it. I really do. But right now it's slow with some with some stumbling. We'll see. Yeah, I started way too fast. These measures are fine. Oops. There we go. Turning the page. Just be warned, the next page is going to get a little hairy. He also has a lot of this right now. That right there is a C flat major chord, which I'm not going to explain why that's obnoxious, but it's obnoxious. Ah! Speaking of obnoxious, sorry. There we go. Oh, sorry. No. There we go. there. Then we get into slightly more normal. We're almost there. You're being so patient. Okay, so that's supposed to go way, 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 way faster, like this. Which is all I can do at that tempo. So actually, you know what? I will explain why C flat major is obnoxious. If you think about how the piano keys are white keys and black keys, there's no black key to the left of C. Now, normally when we have a black key, that's going to be flat of the key to the right. So like if we have E, which is this, and we say E flat, it's that. But so the key that is C flat is actually B. Do you know what I mean? It's like the least convenient way of telling you what you're trying to get to. So that's why C flat major is obnoxious. So there it is, C flat major. Anyway, there's another thing that's kind of interesting about the notation of this, aside from my complete inability to read it yet, which is a little silly. And this is at the very end of this piece. So you heard, right, that we're going from here. It does this nice climb. Let me actually play it. So we have a climb that goes up, 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 and then one more. No, two more here. Now here, if you actually look at the music in the urtext, meaning trying as hard as possible to make exactly only the marks that the composer made, it goes down. So it would be like, this is going to be sloppy, but I'll just sort of make it up. Ugh, I can't even do it. It doesn't make sense. But what's right after that, it goes up high and then up way high. And the way you notate that, just like I was saying that, you know, anything above this note, we're going to write with ledger lines. If you get up really high, a lot of times composers will mark an octava sign, which is basically just says 8VA with a little line, a horizontal line above whatever is supposed to be an octave higher. And it just means play this an octave higher. So it makes it easier to read. So Chopin has his little play this thing an octave higher for the very last two chords. And I think he didn't put it in as soon as he wanted to. I think that he meant it to go. Let me do this because I can't. Oh, you know what? I'm just going to play I'll play the very top notes and you'll hear exactly what I mean. So what he literally wrote is climb, 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 stop climbing, go back here, and then go up to the top. But what would make much, much, much more sense if he had just had that the horizontal line start a little bit earlier, it would go climb, 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 climb to the top. Now, I looked at a couple of different editions about this. Henley, which is also the urtext, I'm playing out of the Polish National Edition, but Henley, which is also the urtext, meaning, you know, composer's marks, also has it go climb and come down and come back up and then go up to the top. The Dover edition, with Mikuli's markings, Mikuli was one of Chopin's students, has the octava marking above these. So the Mikuli version goes, which just seems like it makes more sense. So I need to do a little bit more thinking about this, but as of right now, I'm just thinking that he really meant it to go up and he just put the ABA symbol a little bit too late. You know, that's the kind of thing we have to think about with these texts sometimes, is trying to figure out what did the composer actually mean. Anyway, I'll really get into this next week and report to you about how it's going. And it'll be much, much easier once I've got it off the page a little bit. You can hear there's a lot of repetition, right? I mean, it does this thing in various places a million times. So you will not have to listen to another painfully slow version like that of that. So that's the main stuff that I'm working on. I am making a change in, you know, I've been doing the last few weeks, I've been doing a quote of the week and a fact of the week, and I think I'm going to stop that for now. So I will definitely give you some information about Chopin as we're going along. But I thought instead of having a quote of the week and a fact of the week, I might have an idea of the week, which is a little bit of a lame title. So if you have a better thing to call it, please let me know. But the idea of the week that I wanted to sort of pass on to you this time is, this was from a TED talk, and a guy named Nigel Marsh was talking in Sydney, Australia, about work-life balance, and made a really interesting point, which is that if you try to have every single day be perfectly balanced between your work and your life, it's pretty much impossible. But if you try to have a larger span of time, like maybe 3 days or even a week, be balanced, that becomes more possible. And somehow hearing that for me was really helpful and kind of inspiring. And it's something I've said to a few of my students this week. And it's something I'm really just trying to think of for myself. So like yesterday, I spent most of the day at work, didn't get to hang out with Ben that much. And today I spent most of the day with Ben. So I'm kind of feeling like if I were to look at the balance of my life and looking at each individual day, yesterday and today, I would say neither day was balanced. But I feel like if I look at both days, they were kind of balanced. So that feels useful and kind of healthy. So I thought I'd pass that on to you. That's pretty much what I've got. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy. Play It Again Swig is produced in my living room. You can leave comments or questions, which I would love, and find out more at playitagainswig.com.